podcast, I cover the use of an optical computer mouse, the type that you'll probably have your hand on at the moment, and using it to measure very accurately the swing of a pendulum. This is Ped Hill Explains, where I discuss things scientific. Just as a sort of a little background, I'm doing cardiac rehab and I'm improving my cognitive abilities to describe things. I'm sort of beginning to work out that as I want to describe or tackle some more complex topics, I have to go back and do some simpler podcasts describing basic things like how you set up a pendulum in a school lab and measure the period of it. Then I've sort of been trained not to think scientifically, but as I think about it, I say, oh, well, how are we going to do this? Previously, I've used other things before optical computer mouses, and then I just said, oh, well, we'll put it in there. And so it's not really consciously thinking. I sort of think, oh, I have to do so many podcasts, and in the background of my mind does certain things like rearrange the way that I explain things and just pulling up skills that I have on tap to handle certain problems that you probably wouldn't think of. So the rearrangement of skills is putting the punchline up the front so that people can say, oh, look, if I listen to this podcast, I'll learn how to use an optical mouse to measure the period of a pendulum. Okay, so why do we want measure the period of a pendulum? Well, the period of the pendulum is 2 pi the square root of L, the length of the pendulum, on G. So it's a fantastic little thing because we can measure L, we can measure the period T in seconds, we can put this in to measure the gravitational field, the acceleration. So this is an interesting thing. It's got certain things. It's dependent on L. It's not dependent on M ostensibly, but practically there's a whole lot of experimental do's or sort of intricacies about how you measure L. There's a problem there and a whole series of things, even to the actual volume of your mass displaces air and creates a buoyancy zone. If you use mercury or if you use foam, you'll get a different coefficient due to a damping, which can affect it when you actually put it into the equations, but also due to buoyancy, a whole heap of other effects, which affects G. And that, and this pendulum stuff is a fantastic thing. It was one of the things that when they first had a pendulum, they said, right, I've got it. And then they, I think Richter took it to South America or West Indies. A French person said, hey, Newton, what's going on here? And Newton used it to actually figure out gravity. So it's like he didn't know gravity first and then work out the pendulum. The pendulum preceded gravity. Just another thing invented by Galileo when he saw a large candle, a large lamp being suspended from the roof of the cathedral outside Pisa, the famous Leaning Tower of Pisa, in which he was a musical choir master, and he noted that the people would naturally begin to sing to the beat, or the beat of the natural pendulum was there. So he identified the pendulum, but Galileo, being a savvy person, didn't actually use the pendulum in his time experience. He used the natural beat of his heart. So he was must have been a fairly cool dude. Mustn't have been too excited by his results. To use this beat of his heart to actually time things. An actual second. Your heart, I can tell you, healthy, normal heart beats 80. If you're on heart medication, as I am, you can get right down to 60 a second. Galileo didn't use that. He used the natural pendulum of, in space, the pendulum of the moons of Jupiter. And so, indeed, we stuck with the moons of Jupiter, unknown, to help Captain Cook. Captain Cook used the moons of Jupiter and the pendulum effect in the sky to actually tell the time and basically get GPS accuracy in his maps. You will see that if you look at the maps of Captain Cook of Australia and anywhere he plotted Northern Ireland, Canada, Hudson Bay, Gulf of St. Vincent, is that right? Gulf of St. Lawrence. Sorry, guys, this is all coming streaming off the top of my head. Okay, this is why you want to teach it for a number of reasons, to get people in the lab, and it's something very easy to observe that if you've got a string and a weight, it oscillates really quickly. If it's a short string, oscillates more slowly. If it's a long string, what are the various things that you can do? So the catch in this is use of an optical mouse. So let's do the optical mouse. So above the pendula, you suspend or you hold some paper. So as the pendula swings, the paper moves left to right, left to right. So you have to create a cradle which holds paper, similar to the way that, say, a music score is held vertical. So you have to have something which holds the paper vertical, and I'll describe how that's done later. So you have the paper moving, you position the optical mouse so it's just almost touching, and so it will measure the paper moving back and forth because the paper is got a thin cross section with respect to the direction of motion. So the pendulum is spinning, say, in your face, in your orientation left to right, and the actual pivot of the pendulum, say, in your orientation is just straight directly in front of, say, the middle of your neck as a position in your head, because I've been this in podcast land. The piece of paper is suspended in the same plane of oscillation, or not suspended, affixed in the same plane of oscillation, such that it moves back and forth, and you arrange the computer mouse to move back and forth. And very, very crudely, you can actually position the computer mouse. Oh, you get the original position where you want the computer mouse to start off with on the computer screen by using another computer mouse to position it, then interchanging your USBs such that it fits there. And as you move your pendula from side to side, you can get an amplified position of the, sorry for this, at the amplified position of the motion. So you'll notice that it moves back and forth. It's a rather satisfying thing to do. You can get into your computer and change the gain or amplification of position to position on the screen and measure what it's going across. So this is pretty much sufficient to actually measure the oscillation of a pendulum, which, if you look at it, is you could put an argument in for not for just using visual observation. I can count from side to side. But of course, we want to add a few things to this. It's a basic piece of laboratory equipment, the optical mouse, and a sliding piece of paper. It gives a whole heap of things, and there's basic software that you can get, and one of them is LabVIEW, National Instruments LabVIEW. You can chart out a position, a plane, a virtual instrument on the screen, and as the mouse moves across, there's just for the virtual instrument of the pane, you can call up the properties tab. There's methods and properties, and the properties tabs, you click down to mouse X, mouse Y, and poll that at particular periods of time. You set a period clock to do it on periods of times, and you'll get an automatic micro charting out of where that is. That's, again, you have to go into National Instruments. I've forgotten. It's trying to think what it's in. It's in the basic diagram of this. If you this is basic plotting, it's a basic picture frame in which you can plot basic shapes and draw basic shapes. Now, I've developed a more advanced piece of software called Mouse Tracker, in which I've taken a high speed position of mice. So, if with your hands, mice, and I've taken high speed position of mice as fast as the computer can go, and then fitted a spline curve to where that mice is. So, I've averaged out I've fitted a smoothing curve to it so it takes out human hand vibration, and you can achieve what appears perfect circles, and then I've applied onto that vector stuff, which gives you the velocity and acceleration vector. So the exciting thing about this is, I'll have to put this mask, I think I've put up on the internet a YouTube of this mouse software, but you can actually program it. Live fitting optimization of a series of points in two-dimensional space is a little bit involved, and it's took a while for when I was programming up robotic control by hands, I had to actually take out the natural human vibration in hands that seemed to be a jitter. So when I wanted to get people to get pick and place the robots to be operated by the hands, I had to remove the jitter and actually model individual people. So it's pretty amazing. But the software that I produced is that. So the overall thing is that your pendulum, which is oscillating, will produce this point going from side to side, and you can attach the velocity and acceleration vectors to it. It's a beautiful thing in the software, but again, the students mightn't be able to do it. And of course, with this, you can get the instantaneous period and see how the period changes with angle as it just oscillates down. This is for the use of computer software with your mouse. But of course, as teachers going into it, it's just an interesting thing to do as a basic introduction of using electronics to identify or measure motion. It's obviously the thing to do nowadays with the mice, but previously with the old trackball mice, you could just rip them apart and actually put the rotation measurements onto axes of computers and on axes of little motorized on the motors. And so there's lots of things that you could do with the old trackball mouse. They're gone, so it's now time to use the optical mice. So just the optical mouse again, you need a flat sheet of paper which moves with the oscillation of your pendulum, and then the optical mouse into a computer using LabVIEW National Instruments. It's a fairly straightforward piece of operation to go ahead. I'm sure I've got the mouse VI tucked away somewhere. I might publish it and put it up on the website with a link to it so you can download it. Unfortunately, I'll let you just have the downloaded VI. So if you have the National Instruments software, you should be able to use it. And then there's also an executable for it. I'll give you the YouTube and various things for it. So obviously having that in the back of your brain when you say, look, you have to do a pendulum experiment to explain how it goes, you think that's sitting in the back of your brain. So I must admit, look, I'm not overthinking any of this. I just take a break and say, oh, look, hitting the punchline at the end is rather hard. And people want to know the complexity. So when I was I wanted to talk about Doppler shift, I wanted people to make local oscillators or small oscillator circuits out of just a 20 cents worth of components, then I realized that to explain everything backwards, and then by the time you explain how a transistor works, you can't explain the actual, people are overwhelmed by the time you explain how to actually wire up or measure a transistor. But getting back, we're onto the part of the podcast where we describe basically how you make a pendulum. Now, at the moment, we need an axis which faithfully rocks the piece of paper backwards, which is slightly different from this situation where you have a pendulum, and the main thing is that you want to change the length of the string. And the classic way to change the length of the string is actually pre-measure the string out with actual markers at 10 centimetres or various centimetres ahead of time so that you can quickly run the experiment back. The ideal thing with any sort of sequential stuff, this is from the laboratories. If you've got a sequential stuff in the computer running, you run your sequential stuff in randomized order. It gets rid of backlash and other long-term period things. So if something is drifting, if you do a short measurement, the long measurement, medium measurement, and just hop around, you can things have to be really smart to get in your random selection. However, you've got to get different lengths, and you've got to time the pendulum, hold the pendulum at a small angle or a large angle. If it's the optical mass, you can take real care of this, and you actually don't have to spin through a large angle. Anyway, you can get the large amplification. The sort of standard thing that I recommend is measure one length, and then just simply have a pole and hoop it over the pole. So each time you get 2 pi r, the pole, if you do it properly and carefully, length reduction in the string as you wind it around the pole each time. You just simply measure the final length that you're taking and the number of times that you put it around the pole, and it's just, you don't even have to work out the length. It's, you've taken, say, 30 individual distances or whatever that distance is and divide it up and put it in. But, of course, if you use a pole and put the string at the top of your pendulum around a pole, that's problematic for the following thing of mounting a piece of paper. In general, you need something which is has a well-defined axis. So I'll just quickly describe a basic low-cost technique, given that schools do not have access to machining or purchasing equipment. Well, in my case, definitely not purchasing equipment. In fact, just a teacher, I would probably put $2,000 a year of just buying basic equipment. I buy my own spring, chemicals, everything, because it's just too hard to put in. But you still, even if you buy your own stuff, you still have to put it in through data assessment, safety assessment sheets. You have to still all put it in it, then it gets assessed, approved, signed off, and so you have to buy things, give it to the lab assistant, and then put in the form. I've forgotten what the safety form is, and it's all logged up to the government and all that type of stuff, so they still put it in. So let's see what we're trying to get a string and a weight. If I can really recommend this, is there's plumb bobs. You buy it from the hardware store. You can get small size, large size. Get the small size. And this is a beautifully machined, I think it's brass, but it's got a chrome coating on the outside, so it looks beautiful. And it's that classic Christmas bauble stuff. It's got a screw top and a thread through for a screw at the top, collar at the top with a hole through it, so you put the collar up, tie the knot, and then screw it in. It's a really nice thing, and it's got a real great sensation for students, because they can feel gravitational force pulling down. Then you've got your length of string, and now we've got to have the rotation, high quality rotation axis. And ideally, you want to have a ball bearing axis. And there was rather a stunning discovery I made in Canada. I needed some small ball bearings for a laser interferometer. I needed small for a really crude laser interferometer, a Fabry-Pro interferometer. I needed small ball bearings. I began researching small ball bearings. I eventually phoned up this Canadian company and said, "Do you have small ball bearings?" And he said, "Yes, but you have small ball bearings there." And I said, "No, we don't." He said, "Yes, you do." And he said, "Are you writing with a pen? What type of pen? A ballpoint pen?" Well, pick up the pen, look at the end of it, and that's a small ball bearing. And indeed, they are really high quality small ball bearings at the end of ballpoint pens. So we're going to use those ballpoints in our chum. And so what you do is you get two 6-inch, 15-centimeter small mini stainless steel rulers. Okay, and you get the inners of these Bic pens, these slightly older pens, or any pen basically, in which you can stick through. Now you're going to have to use your imagination here. So at 1 centimeter and 14 centimeters, we want to placing downwards a pen. So the ruler, the pen is just sticking out from the ruler. So if the ruler is traveling left to right, the pen is oriented facing towards you and going up at 1 centimeter and 4 centimeters. So the pen of pa the ruler of the page, ruler on the page, the pen's laid down, and then the second ruler, and then you bind this all together with rubber bands if you're of one type. If you can afford to actually use the rulers and stuff like that, can I just recommend, it's just a natural thing I do, is using epoxy. It makes it really hard, nice, almost close on a scientific instrument. So what will happen here is that this is, it's got unfortunately a moment of inertia which will slow your pendulum down, but calculate that. So this provides a with the pendulum tied at 6 centimeters, dropping downwards in the same direction as the pens are facing downwards, you've got two little stainless steel balls ha held beneath. Look, there's thousands of ways of doing it. I'm just doing explaining how to do this without any machine shopping. And obviously, if you have to produce a number of these for a class, you just, and you have a slightly complex process which requires quality, it's a real tough thing. So you've got this, and you've got the string going down. It's nice if you can arrange something which clamps the string, so releases at certain distances. And so if you have crossbars which support the ruler at the 1 and 14 centimeter points underneath the ball points, and a free gap underneath it, the pendulum will right the ruler up and actually sit it such the ruler looks as though it's magically standing up, the pen standing up, because the counterweight is underneath, similar to a tightrope walker having the center of gravity underneath, so it's up, and you can gently oscillate it now from side to side, get it oscillating. You may need to actually have something to stiffen the string beneath the axis of rotation if you've got a if it tends to the string tends to bend on the point where it intersects the ruler. So you may have to build that down to the line of axis of your pens. That's probably not too hard. So I now have two sets of rulers, two pens, the thing which is rotating. I then have to construct the piece of paper at 90 degrees to this and held up at 90 degrees. Basically, a stiff piece of paper with basically folded. If you're really going for it, you can use something as thick as the side of a plastic Tetra Pak. Pack there. It can be just white paper because your mouse works on white paper. You can fold and orient it stick it down again. You want to keep the weight of this minimal, but you can affix that piece of paper with small neodymium magnets on the side, then up attach the might bring the mouse up to it, and you get your orientation. Now, obviously, this is a more sophisticated way of doing it. You'd want to let your students play around measuring timing in the most simple way forward so they can get the actual knowledge of what the pendulum is, what they're measuring, and what the angle is, and all the ideas out first for a first run. And this is a more sophisticated let's actually hit this with ultrasarts rather than right. It's probably this, and if they hit the right theory of why large angle is working, or various things, if they hit that, they will find it easier to understand. So if you do this first up, you'll get a good fraction of your science enthusiastic students there. There are other students that you have for which you just have to actually build the actual experience. So they need to measure period manually first, and watch this go ahead. Again, this is Pete Hill Explains, and I'm just, I suppose, developing cognitively. So at this stage, I've got sort of certain things going. The improvement of podcasting, I'll try and improve it more. The arrangement of material, so I give the punchline up the front, which is unfortunate because if you focus on the punchline, you can lose some of the basic teaching skills. The overall general cognitive improvement that, as I just set a broad strategic goal of podcasting more and podcasting more accurately. Other things just fall into place of previous experience building instruments in a lab or using software and various things like that can come to the fore. Your thing that you can do up in podcast land is actually help build some of these and report them back, because I need to build a portfolio up if I'm going to get back into the hostile world of teaching, where it's you must teach as via the book and as it has been taught previously. So if you use your previous skills or other willing your other skills in, it in theory it can be appreciated, but in general it's a rather hostile. You get a small benefit for which is yeah you can bank a small benefit, but the actual undercurrent is very much against. So if you can actually build some of these, report it back on the internet, YouTuber will be fantastic. I have to move forward and actually podcast some more other essential stuff to build the actual understanding, to build some of these basic teaching experiences. Yep. Thanks for listening. Keep on thinking science, doing science, and teaching science.